And welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
This week we do not have free advertisement of the week, except that we have discovered that we do not like speed bumps in our neighborhood. Sam I Am
is right. What a pain.
They're supposed to be rated for 20 miles an hour, but if you do that, you actually have to go to the dentist because you just broke all your teeth. So don't believe the ratings on the speed bumps.
20 miles an hour means stop and creep over.
Oh, my goodness. Just the little things. I knew I could pull the ripcord on that one. So I'm going to spoiler alert our guest because my favorite line in the information I was sent about him is, sleep well. There is no climate crisis. I read it last night right before I went to bed. I was like, I think I will sleep well. That is fun.
Yeah, it's nice to hear somebody actually say it.
I know. Super, super good. So our guest this hour is Gregory Wrightstone. I'm going to find out if he goes by Greg or Gregory in about 5 seconds. But he is a geologist and the executive director of the CO2 Coalition in Arlington, Virginia. And I have been dying to get the CO2 Coalition on here. It is a great group. If you do not subscribe to their, I don't know if it's a newsletter or just an email update or whatever, but I've been getting their stuff for years. And the whole time that I was in Congressman LaMalfa's office, he was always sending out things from the CO2 Coalition. So they do a lot of work in Washington educating our lawmakers. Obviously, it's only taking root on one side of the aisle, but they're working on it anyway. He is an expert reviewer for the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the best-selling author of Inconvenient Facts, which I think is fun. The book, I mean, we could talk about that one too, but the other book that we're going to speak about today, and I have both of them linked on the website, today is July 26th, 2026, just in case we air this in the future and some of the stuff we talk about changes, but on the page for today, A Very Convenient Warming is the name of the book. How Modest Warming and More CO2 Are Benefiting Humanity. So we're going to chat with him about that. But the tagline on the bottom of the update I got was, sleep well, there is no climate crisis. And I thought, oh, thank goodness. Maybe we can move on. I doubt it, but it would be fun.
Yeah, because I thought we only had about, what, 8 more years left, according to AOC.
Oh, it's a lot less. It's a lot less than that.
Is it less than that? Yeah, we're right on the brink of catastrophe.
You pretty much don't even have to shower or change your shirt. It's not going to be that long.
We're on the eve of destruction.
There you go. I wrote a song about that.
Yeah, I think they did.
So, Mr. Wrightstone, are you Greg or are you Gregory?
Well, I'm Greg. With two G's, one at the beginning and one at the end.
Nice.
I saw Greg with one G.
God, I love it.
So
we knew a guy named Rick. He always introduced himself as Rick with one eye. The funny part is he did have an eye problem, and he really did only have one eye, but it was also spelled in his name, and he didn't really ever find that funny, but I did.
What do you call a fish with no eyes?
Well, I don't know.
Dinner?
Dinner.
So, Greg with two G's, how would you like to begin this? Because, honestly, this climate – how long have you been working on this, by the way? How about let's start there?
I'm a geologist, and I was one of the founding partners of an energy company, Mountaineer Keystone, back in 2011. We did work – I was one of the lead researchers in the fracking movement, identifying the Marcellus Shale of eastern Pennsylvania, co-authored the first comprehensive, probably the only one, on this, which is the largest gas field in the world by far. Things went south for the company, and I had to walk away, and I had to looking for something. I was always interested in climate change. I knew that some of what we were being told was wrong, and I suspected other things were, and so my first book was Inconvenient Facts, The Science That Al Gore Doesn't Want You to Know. It ended up being multiple times bestseller on Amazon in multiple categories. And I was driven to write that book. I said, what I want to do is do research. I'm going to look at the facts, the science, and the data. I want to look at the basic facts and see what the truth is. And what I found out, frankly, angered me. I found out that much of what we were being told about this so-called climate crisis was just absolutely disinformation. And that led me to write my first book, showing there is no climate crisis. But the second book really is, we've gone beyond that now to show that not only is there not a climate crisis, but rather by almost every metric we look at, Earth's ecosystems are thriving and prospering, and humanity is benefiting from modest warming and more CO2. So to borrow from the Christmas theme in the New Testament, I bring you glad tidings of great joy. there is no climate crisis. Sleep well. In fact, we had a series of billboards around the United States that showed a young lady resting comfortably in bed, and that was the theme, was sleep well, there is no climate crisis. And in fact, we the CO2 Coalition, launched an educational initiative here a few years ago. I'm very proud to be part of that. In our latest book, we're targeting students. A lot of homeschoolers love it. My latest, we started what's called the Sleep Well series. The first was a book that I wrote, illustrated book. It was called Chloe the Clownfish Sleeps Well. And there is this real thing called climate anxiety among the youth, the young people. These people are being indoctrinated into the climate cult at a very young age. And so we wanted to use illustrated, scientific-based comic books to be able to tell the truth about what's actually going on. And I'm very proud of this. You can go search. It's on Amazon. I think it's $7.99 or $6.99 for the book. Wonderfully illustrated. It tells the story of Chloe that lives on the Great Barrier Reef, and she can't sleep at night because she learned in school that her home and her family were in great danger from climate change. And we're able to tell actually the truth in this illustrated comic book. We have a full-time artist in Brazil that's very talented, just really, really good. So if you would just search for Chloe the Clownfish.
No, I just did.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. It is a super cute picture. I'll add it to the page for today because
the key is not only do we have this book, we have a free lesson plan that was drawn up by our senior education advisor, Dr. Sharon Camp, who is a doctorate in analytic chemistry. She was an AP science teacher and reader. And so we have these lesson plans that go along with it. And again, we've been embraced by the homeschool community because we're providing not only the books for free, but we're providing lesson plans so you can teach your children well.
Is this, and this is the one by Greg Zemlansky?
No, Gregory, you got the wrong Chloe. Chloe the Clownfish on Amazon.
Yeah, because I looked up Chloe the Clownfish on Amazon, and the thing that kind of had me wondering was it says this a child's book, they will enjoy reading and look at the pictures, but it says nothing about it. And I thought,
Yeah, check up.
Here's another one. And here we go. It's a much better cover.
Yep.
Much better cover. But yeah, there are two books with that name. And this one, if you look, it's kind of ghosted in the bottom. It says CO2 Coalition on it.
That's it.
I like
it. It's really well done.
And there you are. It's got your name on it. There we go.
Woo!
Yeah. I was like, well, who's that other guy? And how'd he get your book?
Oh, right, Cowboy.
Yeah. So now this one's on here.
And we've got another one you can search for. It's called Foxy the Fruit Bat Sleeps Well. About
the fruit bat, again, he
can't sleep at night because, you know, his island's going to be underwater by 2050, and, you know, it'll be gone. It's just ludicrous. And that's actually one thing we could explore right now to show you one example of how your viewers are lied to about this. The Maldives island where Foxy lives is listed by the UN as the most at-risk island in the world, or chain of islands in the world, that's going to be underwater by 2050. Well, okay, 18,000 years ago, the Maldives, just like today, were just above sea level. 18,000 years ago, since then, we've had 400 feet of sea level rise. So the question you're asking right now, isn't it, why are these islands not under 400 feet of water? That's you're going, wow. And it's a geologic process known as accretion. And what happens is these islands, sea level's rising, and the corals ringing the islands can grow really quickly. They keep up with even really rapid sea level rise. And then the corals are busted up by storms, turned into sands. 80% of the sands ringing the islands and the beaches are from parrotfish that actually eat the coral. So it comes in one end, they digest the little bit of polyps that are there, and the rest of the coral goes out the other end as sand. And so it's really parrotfish poop. It's on, of course, my 7-year-old grandson loves that. And when we talk about parrotfish poop, you know, the little boys, they like that stuff. But
he said poop.
And so what we have is these islands. So the sands during storms gets washed up onto the island. Winds distribute across the island, critters move it around, and the island slowly grows. It's slowly, but geology is a very slow process, and it's kept up with 400 feet of sea level rise. So what they're telling you is, now, at the rate of sea level rise today, which is about 7 inches per century, by 2050, we'll have about another 3 inches of sea level rise. So what they're saying is, the last 400 feet of sea level rise didn't put the Maldives and the other islands underwater. But that next 3 inches, look out, they're going to be underwater.
Yeah.
Well, that's just ludicrous.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll wager you $1,000 right. You've never heard that before. And
no.
Neither have anybody. And it's those things, it's the hidden facts that they have to keep hidden from the public. To keep this narrative of this looming climate crisis in the news, but they have to silence people like me and my colleagues at the CO2 Coalition. They have to silence us, because if we're allowed to get this information out there, it's game over for the climate industrial complex. And people are thirsty for this information, for the truth. And that's what we bring to the debate.
Well, on the fact side of it, the part I've never been able to understand is you have these crazy predictions, you know, we're old, right? So, well, we are. I don't know about you. I don't want to throw you under the bus, too. But I remember in the 70s, we were all going to freeze to death. And it was an ice age, and then we didn't have the ice age. And then we were all going to burn to death, but then we didn't have that. And then it morphed into change. It was just change, kind of nondescript, and the global warming sort of faded into change. But all of these predictions, especially Al Gore and his stuff, none of that has come to pass. At some point, isn't that enough to blow up the – I mean, I'm sure you guys reference that all the time. What do they say?
Yeah. They don't. They just move along. Don't ignore the man behind the curtain. There's nothing to see here, and there's a consensus. They rely on consensus science instead of the scientific method. You hear a lot about, well, there's a consensus. No, well, there isn't. Number one, there isn't. And even if there was a true consensus, that's not how science is done.
Yeah.
And so science is done. It's not by consensus. It's not by groupthink. It's by the scientific method and critical thinking, and that's what we're trying to bring to the to students today. We're getting a lot of traction in the homeschooling community, also the charter schools that we've been able to connect. It's a tough nut to crack to get into public schools. These people are so thoroughly indoctrinated, and that's why we launched this. Our members of the CO2 Coalition came to me several years ago. They were concerned that their grandchildren, in some cases great-grandchildren, were being indoctrinated into this climate cult. And they said, we want to do something. And boy, have we. I'm very proud of what we've been able to do. We're actually making a difference. and people love it. We've had just tremendous grassroots support for our efforts. They say, we want to fund you, because we provide our materials to homeschooling parents and charter schools and public schools that we can get in at no cost. And so this is a great benefit to them. So we've had people reaching out. When I took over, we had 145 donors. Today we've got over 20,000. These are all individuals. We have some small family foundations. We don't get any funding from any of the energy companies or oil companies at all. But we do get lots of people wanting to support what we're doing, because we're actually making a difference. And at some point today, before we're done, I'd like to talk about what we're doing in the legal arena in Washington, D.C., in terms of what's called the endangerment finding and what we're doing there.
Okay, good.
But our educational outreach is really, really strong. We've videos also with that, with lesson plans that go along with it. I was going to work on today my next Sleep Well series book. It's called Melvin the Manatee Sleeps Well. and I'm calling you from Apollo Beach, Florida.
Oh,
perfect. We're on the Gulf of America. And just to the north of me here, within 3 miles, is a coal-fired power plant. And so the story is about, and all the manatees come in the cold, cold winter. When it gets really cold, they all aggregate there at the coal-fired power plant, because they're sending warm water out into this embayment where they, and there'll be 1,500 manatees gathered. I mean, it almost looks like you could walk across this embayment on the backs of the manatees. But they have to go there because the cold water, if it gets lower than 61 degrees Fahrenheit, they can go into shock and then death.
So they're not going to boil and die from global warming. They're actually.
But I'm surprised. Oh my God, surprised they haven't attacked that and said that it's a ecological disaster.
I know. I was kind of waiting for that too.
Manatees are all hiding from impending death.
Well, that's a huge discussion, because they were trying to close down the coal-fired power plant.
Of course.
And so on one hand, the environmentalists say you have to close down the coal-fired power plant because it's leading to this existential threat and planetary doom from emitting carbon dioxide.
Right.
And on the other hand, they say, well, if we shut it down, all these manatees, 12 or 1,500 manatees that are able to survive only because of the coal-fired power plant, well, what do we do? They're going to die. And so it's a real puzzle for them on what should we do. And that's what the story is about. It's about Melvin that can't sleep at night because the coal-fired power plant's going to be shut down.
And he's worrying about it.
Right. And so they're able to tell the story about, you know, how. So hopefully I'll get that done here this week. I was going to work on it today.
Do you have a storybook where the character is a sloth?
Not yet. Not yet. We have one right now called Holly that's in production. Holly the Holstein Sleeps Well. About a Holstein cow in Switzerland. You know, there's this huge movement away from cattle, because they're
right.
A great danger, because now they don't fart methane. Am I allowed to say fart?
Yeah, yeah, we like fart.
I just did. Okay.
This whole show, okay. We're just going to call it the Farting Show with Greg Greystone.
Right, right. So they don't come out that end. The methane comes out, they belch methane. It doesn't go back out the rear end, it comes out the front end by belching. And it's part of the fermentation in fermenting. They have four stomachs, and one of those is an anaerobic, no oxygen compartment. And they're able to eat and digest grasses. They're called a ruminant. And so the ruminants are buffalo, deer, goats, sheep, cattle, and they're all able to digest otherwise indigestible grasses and cellulose and convert that into something useful like milk, meat, things we need, and they're able to do that. But in that process, it's a fermentation process in the fermentation process, one of the byproducts is methane. And so I thought that was fascinating. But anyhow, the whole Holly, the Holstein, in the Netherlands, I was there 3 years ago in the summer. And because my first book my latest book, A Very Convenient Warming, was published in Dutch. So we went over to the Netherlands for a book tour. And in the Netherlands, there was a proposal while we were there to close down 50% of the cattle in the Netherlands, which is huge.
Oh, my God.
The second largest livestock country in the world, and they were going to cull half of them because of climate change.
Brilliant.
And it's just, yeah, again, some of the things that are being done are just incredibly stupid.
Yes.
And we were actually able to go to learn, just if I could, can you just one moment, you'll learn something here, we went to the city of Gouda. You would know it. You would, if you looked at it, that's where the cheese Gouda is made, and it's not Gouda in the Netherlands. In the Dutch, they call it Gouda. You got to kind of grunt a little bit as you say it. So that's the correct pronunciation of that cheese. While we were there, this is fascinating. While we were there in the United States and the worldwide, they were talking about this terrible heat wave in Europe, worst ever. Terrible, terrible heat wave because of climate change. Well, there was a heat wave in southern Europe. I was in the north of Europe, in Holland, in the Netherlands, and it was colder than all get out. It was June, and we had to wear a winter coat. So they don't advertise the cold that's unusual. They don't advertise the heat that's unusual, and that's by design.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Figures. We have to take a really quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get more information and more fun facts. How about that from our new best friend, Greg Wrightstone. He is with the CO2 Coalition. You're listening to We the People. And you can find all of it at wethepeopleradio.us.
If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, it wouldn't be 20 below. It wouldn't be 20 below. If we had some global warming, if we had some global warming, I wouldn't be shoveling snow. I wouldn't be shoveling that blasted snow. If we had some global warming, if we had some...
Now here we have two real pioneers embarking upon a new career, capitalizing on this global warming hype. Yeah, they're the ones that brought you the left-handed hammer and tried to market a recycled pamper. You could say the Gullible brothers have always been the entrepreneurial type. But this next harebrained Gullible venture could be earmarked as the major clincher as to whether or not they'll be living it up in their retirement age. They put all they had into one bankroll, bought a bunch of land down at the South Pole, eagerly awaiting the impending doom of climate change, thereby being in the catbird seat in the new Florida. And I'm all for working hard to keep this planet clean, but man-made global warming just don't make no sense to me. But if you insist on buying into this media false alarm, I know a couple of guys who wheel and deal in frozen farms.
Love it. Love it.
Just in case you need to turn your book into a musical.
Oh,
call Ray Stevens.
Let's do it.
Such a catchy song, and it's so stupid too. I mean, it's true. They've got whatever happened with Greta. What's her face? Is she still a thing?
Thunberg or
thumbnail?
Yeah, she's gone over to the pro-Palestinian Hamas anti-Israel movement. It appears she's completely dropped the climate change bandwagon, or what she was trying to stoke. Uh-huh. I haven't heard anything of her talking about for a year and a half or 2 years about climate change.
I haven't either. I thought maybe I just stopped listening, but she seems to have disappeared. Well, that's kind of too bad. I mean, she must have been a lot of good good fodder for you guys.
Yeah, but you know, what I'm seeing is that I've been saying for years now, one of the things that people that hear me is I've been saying for years, we are winning. I could feel it coming. I could feel it coming. Now it's really, really, we were facing strong headwinds. Now we've got the wind at our backs and people are waking up. I think the huge, huge percentage of Americans today doubt this claim of a climate crisis and human causes of this pending climate collapse. And I travel a lot, talk to a lot of just random people, and just about everybody I talk to is just thirsty for this information that we provide to them, the truth, the science, the data that says no. We don't have dangerous sea level rise. And by almost every metric you look at, modest warming and more CO2 are benefiting our ecosystems. And it's really a truly great feel-good story. And it's not just a story, it's a factual narrative. And again, they have to silence us, because once we get that out there and the people understand, I said it before, it's game over for this climate industrial complex. And probably the greatest benefit, it isn't probably, I think it's clearly the greatest benefit that is accruing to the human condition and humanity is that of huge increases in our agricultural productivity.
Yes.
And it's huge. California's benefiting from it. All of America, almost all of the world, from the coldest to the warmest countries, are seeing record-breaking increases year after year of agricultural productivity. The crop production increase is exceeding and outpacing population growth by a lot. And there are a few things that go into that. One of those, you say, warming, we're in a warming trend. We are. It's been warming for more than 300 years, but only since the mid-20th century have we started adding a lot of CO2 to the atmosphere that could have any influence on the warming. And so we had 200 or so years of warming that was naturally driven. But this warming trend that we're in, if you look at it, growing season in the continental United States since 1900 has increased by 2 weeks. That's really, really good for agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Killing frosts earlier in the spring and arrive later in the fall. And then that's turbocharged by increases of carbon dioxide that, of course, you know, photosynthesis, what do we need? Water, sunlight, and carbon dioxide. And the more carbon dioxide, the better. And that's just fueling. What we see from this, what's happening with that? We're seeing the forests are expanding. The earth is what we call greening. In other words, vegetation has exploded over the last 40 or 50 years because of warming and more CO2. And also there are side benefits of activated nitrogen in the atmosphere from the burning of fossil fuels. And that's one thing we're just looking into right now, that also is turbocharging forest and grassland and crop growth, is this additional nitrogen that's in the atmosphere that could be consumed and the plants need. And so it's truly, truly remarkable and really good for the human condition.
What's the response that you get when you testify on these these issues? I realize that's kind of a broad question, but in general, are you met with a lot of resistance?
We don't get too many opportunities. We take every top opportunity we can to testify, but usually this is a Republican Democrat issue. Democrats almost to a person, at least in office. Subscribe to this man-made catastrophic warming narrative. The Republicans are very open to what we call climate realism and what the facts are about climate change. So, I've testified in Pennsylvania, and also Wyoming, Montana. We've testified before on Capitol Hill in Washington. And they're usually, the people running these are typically on our side or we wouldn't be invited. It's been good, but for the most part, forget about testifying. It's just the general average person in the United States is really, really responsive to what we have to say. And if you give me you give me 10 minutes with someone, I can convert them. Maybe 5% of the true believers know, but people haven't heard and don't understand the information that we provide, and it's in my most recent book, which is Convenient Warming, A Very Convenient Warming. And so it's both A Very Convenient Warming and Inconvenient Facts have been hugely popular.
In your books, do you directly address the bogus information in Al Gore's book? In your last books, Inconvenient Facts. I mean, Al's book has been out long enough now to pretty much debunk everything in it. There's been enough time gone by where, I mean, he gave dates and time frames on when this was all going to happen, and none of it came true. So
I don't directly do that because a lot of what he said is confronted in the books, but I didn't want to do that because I felt it was, by the time I was writing these, it was already, you know, 15 years out of date. I like to be topical. Mm-hmm. and more up to date. We were able to use similar, more recent arguments from other people.
Right.
Okay. And my job as a scientist, and people, you at some point today, you were going to ask me, well, why are they lying to us? That's a great question. And well, my stock answer to that, well,
and control, you know, I guess.
Yeah, they're, we come up with a lot of different, why are they doing it? I can't see inside men's and women's souls to see what their motivation actually is. But as a scientist, that's not my job. My job is to say, okay, here's what they're telling you, and this is the truth. This is completely 180 degrees opposite of what you're being told. That's my job as a scientist, is to provide the truth about that. And that's what I do in my two books, is provide that. And very easily, don't think these books are scientific treatises that are difficult to understand. They're definitely not. They're very, very readable. The charts, I've got 90 colorful illustrations in both books, that are the regular Joe and Jane on the street that's not a scientist has no problem looking at these charts and understanding them.
Well, that's good. Yeah, because I know there was, I don't know if Al Gore's book was the beginning of all this craziness. I think it came along after this had already been well underway. But to come out with such outrageous statements and get everybody all worried about falsehoods, I mean, it was blatant. And, of course, he had scientific professionals that backed him up. You know, I mean, I think he called it the scientific community agreed with
him. Well, yeah. Yeah, the consensus backed him up. No, it doesn't. And in fact, right in front of me, I'll hopefully have a review tomorrow. We've got a report on Montana and climate change. And there was a court case. It was called the Climate Kids versus Montana. It's Held versus Montana. And we've done a complete expose on that. And the court said that, man-made climate change was real. It's leading to increased heat waves, increased fires. Just a whole litany of things that the court said was true, and we go through and we provide the information. It says, no, it's not. This is what the facts are. They were claiming increased floods. No, there are no increased floods. Increased forest fires. No, they're actually declining. Heat waves peaked in Montana and across the United States in the 1930s, and the heat waves today are nothing like they were back then. And it's just, we were able to go through, and we're doing this on a state-by-state report. California's in the mix coming up. We just started working on that. So we're just debating now if we want to break California up into Northern California and Southern California, since the climates are so different there. But that's right now we're working through that right now. And the other thing that your listeners, I find people are hugely interested in, one of my favorite parts of this is the interrelationship and the correlation between human history and temperature history. And we find that the warming periods dating back to the first great civilizations, there have been three great warming periods going back to that time that were warmer. Each of those warming periods were warmer than it is today. And each one correlated with the rise of great civilizations and empires. And it's the intervening cold periods that were absolutely horrific to humanity. Each, as it started getting cold, the first warming period was called the Minoan Warm Period. It correlated to the Bronze Age. The first great civilizations rose up. The Hittites, the Babylonians, the Assyrians, in the Indus River Valley, the Harappan Empire there. And then they all collapsed. It was called the Late Bronze Age Collapse. When it started getting cold, all of those civilizations collapsed. And it was due, we see it time and time again, when it started getting cold, with crop failure, famine, mm-hmm. pestilence, and mass depopulation. Not good. So I will tell you that, you know, we should welcome the warmth and fear the cold.
Yeah, which just absolutely makes sense. We shouldn't really have to tell people that, but maybe it's kind of a Darwin deal. Let's take a really swift break. We're going to come back with our guest, Greg Wrightstone, from the CO2 Coalition. And you can find it all at WePeopleRadio.us.
So don't delay, act now. Supplies are running out. Allow if you're still alive. 6 to 8 years to arrive. And if you follow them, it be out tomorrow. But if the offer's shun, you might as well be walking on the sun. You might as well be walking on the sun.
Talk to me about the polar bear. Don't talk to me about the ozone layer. Ain't so much of anything these days, even the air. They're running out of rhinos, what do I care? Let's hear it for the dolphin. Let's hear it for the trees. Ain't running out of nothing in my deep freeze. It's casual entertainment.
I think Dire Straits hit that one out of the park. They were way ahead of their time. Another option for your musical. Alex had a question for you before we went on our break.
Oh, yeah. So, in regards of predictive programming in movies and television, you have movies like 2012, The Lorax, M. Night Shyamalan's The Happening, that kind of seed in this climate change
narrative.
Narrative, yes, good. do you have any comments on that?
Well, they're all, it's part and parcel, isn't it, with that woke agenda that we see weaving its way in and out of all these movies. And although climate change isn't normally thought of as woke, it's probably part of this left-wing movement that distorts science, you know. They're telling us that boys can be girls and girls can be boys, that men can give birth, which is completely anti-science. And what the science and what they're talking about climate change is anti-science. It's disinformation that they're spreading. And you know, that's our job at the CO2 Coalition, to provide the facts, the science, and the data. And if you want to learn more, our website is co2coalition.org, co2coalition.org. And if you want to learn about our education materials and get some of the free books I was talking about, that's co2learningcenter.com. Go get your free downloadable PDFs of the lesson plans for each of these. We want to make it easy for homeschooling parents and charter schools to get the information they need. that's been vetted by true scientists.
That is so cool.
Which we are.
That is so cool.
Give the website again, please.
The CO2coalition.org, CO2coalition.org, and the educational site is CO2learningcenter.com. Really good stuff there. And you can go on the learningcenter.com. You get the fun facts. We have an artist in Brazil that's really talented. You saw Chloe the clownfish, the image.
I'm looking at it right now. It's cool.
Yeah,
notice I used the word cool.
Well, Chloe, now you don't know, you may get a picture of me up on your website, but I've got a blazing silver mustache, and it's kind of my trademark when I talk, and people recognize me because of it.
Yeah, so
Tiago, our artist, Chloe's father, there's a scene there right at the beginning of the book. He put a silver mustache on Chloe's father, and it's kind of fun. Also, in one of the videos, I do the voice of Mr. Fish, and he put a mustache on Mr. Fish too, so white mustache. And so we have some fun with it. We're not just really serious science. Well, we are science geeks, but we have some fun doing what we're doing because we're educating the people. And again, it's really, really worthwhile. I think it's so great what our people and our team have done there so far.
Yeah, you guys do put out really, really good information, and it isn't a bunch of It's not two things, right? It isn't super political, and it also isn't preachy, and doesn't make people feel stupid that maybe they don't know a huge amount of science. It's kind of like science for normal people.
Yeah, and now, Brim, we are the preeminent scientific organization in the world that's going against this climate consensus narrative of a climate crisis. We've more than 200 of the top scientists in the world, Nobel laureate in physics from California, John Clauser. We've just truly great scientists, and that's our thing. I made the decision when I took over in 2021. I said, we're sticking to the science. We're going to stay out of politics where there's no place for that. We want a scientific organization that's accessible to the public, that we only do science and stay out of the place. So we're not an activist group. We don't do that. What we do is provide the science. And one of the things you might be interested in is we had a great short report, well, 20 pages. It was on chemtrails. It's titled Chemtrails or Contrails by Dr. Roy Spencer, who was at the University of Alabama at Huntsville, truly great physical climatologist, meteorologist, physicist, and it tells you the truth about what actually is happening. And those aren't chemtrails you see in the sky; those are contrails, precipitation of water, the water vapor predominantly. That's when you burn jet fuel. There's a little bit of soot, and that's released along with the water vapor. And it's that tiny bit of soot that the water molecules condense on. That's what you're seeing. And so it's very well documented. The science is sound and settled. There isn't this grand global conspiracy that is spreading sulfates or whatever they claim is coming out of these jets.
Oh, it's heavy metals. Yeah, barium and strontium. And
yeah, so it's a...
We have a guy who lives, Dane Wigington, who would be the... Yeah. Okay, you're right.
Oh, my Lord.
Yes.
One of the things he says, one of his arguments, well, there's aluminum in the rock all over. All right. Well, yeah. Okay. The aluminum, clay minerals are aluminosilicates. And we have dust storms that come over from the Sahara Desert that include clay particles are very, very fine. That's the micro-sized things that are being swept over with the dust storms, clay minerals, and that's what it is. How can you get aluminum up on, you know, across all the United States, the Rocky Mountains? Well, that's how. We just saw Sahara dust just recently again, and there's not a lot of it, but over the years it accumulates, and that's one explanation. And also, the United States takes these contrails very seriously because. And in this report, if you search for it, go to CO2coalition.org and just search for contrails or chemtrails. And what they do is they show images of World War One with dogfights, with the, you know, the biplanes with contrails behind them. And we also are stealth aircraft. They take this very seriously, because if you have a stealth aircraft that's putting out a contrail, they're not very stealthy anymore. And so they work this whole thing out where you have to be at the right altitude. It all has to do with the amount of water vapor in the atmosphere and the altitude you are. And but it's a great resource. Look it up and find out.
Well, that's fantastic.
Again,
because
don't buy into this. Don't buy into this at all.
You have to understand that Voldemort lives right here. Actually, the one show we did, the one guy was so pissed off about it, we referred to him as He Who Shall Not Be Named for the whole show. I realized it used a little extra time, but it was kind of worth it. He lives here. Does a scare show.
Is that Wigginton?
Yeah. Does a scare show here. I've dealt with him a lot. I could tell you stories. But yeah, there's we are the epicenter of that, I'm sad to say.
Oh,
I know.
Yeah, it's
I've wasted way too much time on that topic, and there are people.
Exactly. Thank you.
There are a ton of people who, hey, I mean, good Lord. I mean, just a ton of people who are afraid to go outside. They're positive they're being sprayed, blah, blah, blah. Although I do believe the influence is waning. His whole thing was, you know, everybody's getting asthma. And I said, look, I have 30% lung capacity. If they were spraying us and it was affecting our lung capacity, I wouldn't be 65 years old and walking my dog every day. Like, that wouldn't be happening.
So that's just
illogical. Like, I'm your canary in the coal mine. It's not happening.
Well, think about the hundreds of thousands of people who have to be in on this, and no one's spoken out about it.
Oh, I got the answer to that now. You're not informed here. Have you ever been in the military? There's secrets you don't let out.
Yeah. And the government is super great.
These people that are all involved in this are very secretive.
Oh, they're paying off. I liked it that the pilots are all bought off. And I'm like, well, that's nice, but who's...
I like the secret airbase in Oregon where all the unmarked planes are landing.
I'm like, who's scheduling all these people, making sandwiches for them, cleaning the planes? You know, I mean, this is tens of thousands of people around the world, and they're all being bought off? Really?
Right, and if you're the CEO of Delta or Southwest, are you going to consent to having additives put in the fuel of your plane? Or, you know, we don't see, there are no jets these are contrails with condensation of water vapor, for crying out loud. And we've already wasted too much time on it.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, it's pretty funny though, because there are, I mean, it's sad. There are a lot of people who are pretty apoplectic about that. And, the other guy who was really good about it years ago, he was the one who kept calling him Voldemort, was Jim Lee, the guy that made the climate viewer, the 3D climate viewer. And
I don't know that name.
Oh, you ought to look up the 3D climate viewer. It's awesome.
Really?
Yes. He has put, like, you can roll the world around, you know, like you're looking at Google Earth really from outer space, and you can roll the world around, and depending on the layers that you look at, you can see all the planes that are flying. He's got it all, like, networked in to the same viewer. It's actually very trick. Very, very interesting, but he was, oh, man, we did that with him years ago, and he was the first one to really come out and debunk a lot of his stuff with fact rather than just logic,
which was good enough
for me. But no, Jim's a really interesting guy, very up on all that. So we had a good time with him way back when. But holy cow, I can't believe we're out of time. See, we should have forced you to be on here for the whole time because there was more to talk about, darn it. But yeah, so we're gonna do this again, huh? We've got to do this again because this was super fun, and there just is a lot to talk about with the climate change thing because there are a lot of stories that they tell us all.
Yeah, there's still people out there spreading.
And unfortunately, it's really hard. It's hard for people.
I'm going to disagree a little bit because, of course, I'm a climate geek. And again, you give me 10 minutes with anybody, I can convince them. But that's why your listeners and viewers need to go buy my latest book, A Very Convenient Warming. Just two words, convenient warming, and you can find it. It gives, you can arm yourself with the facts with that. It's very easy to read. It's not dumbed down, and it's full of colorful charts that tell the story of what's actually happening. It's all fully sourced and referenced. Again, this is a I'm a science guy.
We have to run away, though, because the news is going to cut us off, which will be harsh. But we will be playing It's the End of the World as we know it, just for fun, and we'll talk to you later. Greg Redstone, thank you so much.
Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.